Welcome to another podcast in the Tales from the DC Multiverse Podcast Network. That's what I'm calling it for now until a better name comes up. But because I'm starting a new podcast on a very particular DC hero, I needed a co-host who I consider to be a super fan of this character and an expert in this character's world. And so I've brought in Brandon Alvarado to join me as my co-host through this podcast journey. And if I'm bringing Brandon on, he's been on, you've been on one or two episodes of the main show in the past, Brandon.
I think two posts. I think we've done two episodes, I think.
Right, I think so, yeah. And if our listeners that are listening now listen to those shows, they'll know that you are a massive fan of The Flash.
Yes.
So if you're a massive fan of The Flash, why don't you tell the listeners, the audience, and tell them what we're doing?
So Adam and I got together about doing a podcast on my favorite, one of our favorite heroes, and my favorite hero, which is The Flash. And we were tweeting and tweeting to find out a name. And what better name for a podcast that's going to highlight the wonder, the comics, the movies, that everything that's related to The Flash and celebrating that character, then a take on the classic story that introduced the multiverse pretty much to this, to the comic book world, which is The Flash of Two Worlds. So welcome to the first episode, guys, of The Flash of Two Mics, where we talk all things Flash in every episode.
Perfect. Well said. And I couldn't have said any better than that, so I'm glad I turned it over to you. So what we're going to aim to do on this podcast is cover everything from movie news. We're obviously going to talk about the TV show, and but you know, more importantly, we're going to highlight the source material, the comic books. So that's what we're going to aim to do, and it's going to be a monthly thing. So we're going to get together once a month, and we're going to have one of these podcasts. So we hope you will join us in this journey through the Speed Force. Nice. Why don't we kick things off with a little bit of news? So, the Flash movie, Brandon, that has been a, as far as I'm concerned, a far too long gestating thing. It's like for the fastest hero in the DC universe.
Yeah,
it's the movie that seems to be taking the longest.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's the movie world's version of irony or what the hell is going on, but I want a Flash movie, and it's gone through, I don't know, a laundry list of directors, mm-hmm, and writers, and but now I think we're at a stage where the most recent announcement of the creative team involved is the closest I think we have. Like what I mean is, with these two individuals on board, I think the movie has the best chance of actually moving forward.
Right.
And it was about a month and a half, 2 months ago, maybe, that it was announced that It and It 2 director Andy Muschietti and Bumblebee, Birds of Prey, and Batgirl screenwriter Christina Hodson would be tackling the project. From what we know is that Ezra Miller will stay on as Barry Allen and The Flash. So, Brandon, what do you think of this development?
To me, I mean, I want to be excited, of course. I mean, hearing that they're going to make a movie about your favorite superhero gives you the butterflies, you know? Mm. Like, you can't wait for it to happen. But this particular property in movie form has been such a non-starter that I'm going to be honest, as a fan, I like the names that I'm hearing. I mean, Christina Hodson is a hot ticket item right now in Warner Brothers. And the Muschietti's It movies were very good, in my opinion. So I think he does have very good directing chops. He handled an ensemble cast of characters very nicely. So he does know what he's doing. Mm-hmm. But I'm at that stage where, as a fan, I kind of feel a little burned out. Like, I'm at that point where, until I see a trailer, I don't believe it. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see him, like, I want to see the blur just go right in front of me so I can be like, holy crap. it's here. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So I like the talent involved. I hope that at this point Ezra does stay, because because my interpretation of the news in the last situation that we had, where we had Goldstein, I don't remember the name of the other one.
Daly.
Yeah, John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein.
Right.
The way all the rumor mill and everything developed, it kind of let you know that Warner Brothers had Ezra's back in such a way that the directors decided to walk. Mm-hmm. Because that's the way it looks. So I just hope that at this point it was worth it, that move, because that's like the second set of great directors that we had. So of young, great directors mm-hmm. that we have lost. So hopefully they find a happy medium. The funniest thing that I find is this: the fact that Christina Hudson is writing the new script or treatment tells me that maybe Grant Morrison's and Ezra Miller's script wasn't that great.
I could believe that, only because Grant Morrison is an acquired taste.
Yes.
I personally am 50-50 with him. In terms of stuff I like, stuff I didn't. And Ezra Miller, to my knowledge, has never written a script before.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine that being turned in and being a script that is something that Warner Brothers looks at and says, yeah, oh yeah, this is going to have mass appeal on the same scale as Shazam or Aquaman, which is what ideally you need.
Right.
To have happen.
Now, what does make me happy is that even though I have not seen Bumblebee, the way that movie was received was fantastic. And that's one of those standalone point A to point B emotional stories
mm-hmm.
that a good first movie should have. So if she handled that script well, I can see her understanding what are the base, like she can tell a good story. So I'm really excited to see what she brings to the table.
And that you brought that up, I think it is important, because Andy Muschietti, in an interview while he was wearing a Flash hat, that's mm-hmm. good news. I mean, that's how starved we are as Flash fans for news. He wore exactly. a hat and they all got excited. But yeah.
My Google alerts went crazy.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah. But he said that what drew him to the project was the emotional arc and the heart of the character. So
yeah.
that is encouraging. Because the easy answer would have been, oh yeah, I like people that can go really fast. But he didn't give the go-to obvious answer, which I dig. But again, I'm impressed with the names that are attached this time around. The reason why I say it's got the best chance is mainly because of the success of It and Bumblebee. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing: It being a Warner Brothers / New Line sort of project, Andy Muschietti has directly made money for Warner Brothers, whereas Goldstein and Daly, I mean, Game Night was entertaining. It made a decent amount of money, but it wasn't a huge hit. You know what I mean?
Right.
It didn't make super bank at the box office. And, so the fact that he made coin for Warner Brothers, and, that's a big, so that's a good thing. That's what they want. But the other thing that encourages me is that, from what I know of Andy Muschietti, is that he's a horror-centric director. And it seems to me that every time a horror director boards a comic book superhero project, the results tend to be quite good to fantastic. I mean, Richard Donner did it from The Omen to Superman. We've had, James Wan with Aquaman. We had, what is the guy? The guy that did Shazam. What is his name? Why am I forgetting his name?
Oh, I know his name. that guy. No.
Yeah.
Now I forgot the name too. I can find it. I can find it.
All right, we'll go to Google.
I know he's Swedish. I know that.
Yes, one. Yeah.
I
have him on social media too, but for whatever
reason. He's a very cool guy. Okay, come on. Don't fail me, Google. David Sandberg.
That's, there we go. Yeah. So, I mean, Warner Brothers is what, at the very minimum, 3 for 3 with that, employing that tactic. So, you know, for whatever reason, their sensibility works when they transition from the horror genre to the superhero genre. And so I'm hopeful. And but like you said, for me, I don't know if I'll necessarily need to see a trailer to believe it. What I need to see is them go into production.
Okay.
Once the start of production happens, then I can be calm and relaxed. But as of right now, that's what we have to go on. So let's keep our fingers and toes and everything else crossed, and we'll track the development of this thing, and hopefully we'll be talking about casting and other things sooner rather than later.
Well, let's see what we got so far.
Transitioning to the small screen, Brandon. Mm-hmm. The season, what are we on, 6 now of The Flash?
Season 6 of The Flash.
Kicked off. We're 3 episodes in as of this recording. 2 of the 3 have been very, more so than the third, but 2 of the 3 have been very Crisis on Infinite Earth centric.
Yes.
What are you thinking of this season 3 episodes in?
I'm liking it a lot. I think it picked up a lot of, it started, that's what I'm looking for. It started grabbing my attention from the get-go as opposed to building up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because I know Crisis is coming, but the way they're handling the show pre-Crisis, and still keeping a cohesive single arc for those first 7 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I like what they're doing. I feel that they're handling it very, very well. I like the inclusion of Bloodwork.
As do I, yeah.
I love the actor that's playing Bloodwork.
Yeah, I don't know. Murthy?
Yeah, from I love Heroes. That guy.
Yeah,
yeah, I love
that's
that guy.
That's how I know him.
Me too. I even remember Mohinder.
That's it. Yeah, I was gonna, if the name didn't come to me, I was gonna call him Mohinder, but
yeah, Mohinder. Oh, yeah. You just had it like in your back pocket. but yeah, the inclusion of Bloodwork and how that villain, I think, is one of the more interesting parts of it. But what I love about this, the fact that they're handling all these shows pre-Crisis and the way they're handling The Flash, is that they're handling the Crisis portion of The Flash very interestingly, because I'm going to be honest, I am halfway through Crisis of Infinite Earths, because I have not finished the book. Yes. Okay. So one of the things that I find interesting is that in Crisis, nobody knew that Barry was going to have to give his life. It was just the end result, you know. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But I would assume somebody has read Crisis.
Yeah, from 1980, whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So the fact that the way they're handling it is that Barry knows from the end of episode 1 that he has to, quote unquote, die in Crisis, gives everything a very different spin. And has a certain degree of tension that they're really using very, very well in their storytelling. That I think that's like my favorite part of it. Because technically, that tension is what fueled episode 2, which is A Flash of Lightning, which to me has been one of the best Flash episodes that I've seen in a long time.
Oh, I agree.
So, like, the inclusion of Jay Garrick, Joan Garrick, the way they introduced how antimatter looks, or how it's going to destroy people and stuff like that, that whole journey, him having to deal with helplessness and accepting a truth, but then going back to being hopeful, which is, to me, is one of the biggest challenges that the show has had, is kind of like portraying the character of the Flash as this symbol of hope. Because a lot of people, when they think about DC Comics and they think about hope, they think of Superman. But the reason why, for me, the Flash is a bigger, even more vibrant symbol of hope is because, apart from the fact that he's a superhero, he's human.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows what it is to struggle as a human. And his challenges to be hopeful are bigger than those of Superman. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, yeah. Superman is like the Superman that everybody can live up to, but Flash is the everyday guy, because one of the things that, of course, that I love about Barry Allen is that even though he has these godlike powers, he still sees himself as this average Joe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's very humble in that regard, so, which makes his being the Hope a lot better. But yeah, I loved episode 2. Episode 3 was okay. The new Harrison Wells is interesting.
Right. Yeah.
Was I the only one that saw that he pulled the shard of Dreamstone? Did you see that?
I didn't recognize what it was, but now that you brought it out, yeah.
Yeah, it was. And the only reason I kind of noticed it is because he pulls the shard, it's red, and then he starts talking about how this shard can give you the worst nightmares. And I was like, what? What? What?
That's a great pull. Yeah, when I watched the episode initially, it didn't click, but it now that you've brought it up, yeah, definitely. And you're right. I like that every season we've had a different version of Wells. And Tom Cavanaugh must be loving it, because what a gift as an actor to be able to, you're playing the same character, but not, right? And I mean, this version of Wells is has Indiana Jones tendencies, at least off the initial, intro to him. And as a fanboy of other properties, and the crossover being so big, I'm like, this is never going to happen. But the two fanboy, two parts of my fanboy life colliding would be as if he looks down what would look like a sewer and found the Ninja Turtles. That would be the ultimate crisis surprise. Crazy. But it's not going to happen. But my mind went there.
Well, technically, remember, it can happen. There is a corner of the DC Universe where Batman works with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That can happen. Right. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for that. But like you, I did like Bloodwork and the introduction of that and how the story with his mother and why he's doing what he's doing. I love when you can abhor the villain's ultimate, what he ultimately does, but you can sympathize with his reasoning. You can understand his reasoning.
Right.
And you can say, yeah, I get it, but, and that's what I get with this version of Bloodwork here. And the actor plays it so well. I'm really liking, in terms of, the Flash family, not the speedsters, but the Team Flash, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loving the increased story for Caitlin and the balance of her and Killer Frost and her letting Frost have some time, and now seeing Frost on the outside having to live her own life. That's an interesting thing. And watching Danielle Panabaker play that is very good, because she's a one of my favorite actresses on the show and in the Arrowverse. So watching her do that is quite enjoyable. And that season 4 was probably my least favorite, but the last two I've really started to redeem and give me, at least in my eyes, the iris that I wanted, the reporter iris. We're getting a lot of that this season.
Yes.
And I'm absolutely loving it. And given better material, I think Candace Patton is flourishing with what she's being given.
Yes.
And I'm very appreciative to the new, I think it's the new showrunner / executive producer, who I think at one of the Comic-Cons says that he loves Iris as a character and really wanted to get her on the right track. And I think that statement that he made at Comic-Con, he's succeeding in that arena. So good on him. Episode 2 blew me away, much like it did you. Seeing Jay and his wife, and even though they're not Barry's parents, but the emotional connection that he has, because they look, they're the doppelgangers of his parents. The emotional resonance that has in the episode, it really does pull at your heartstrings. And kudos to Grant, to John Wesley Shipp and I can't remember the actress who plays Barry's mother / Jay's wife, but all three of them do a phenomenal job at
oh yeah
in the performances. And the other thing I gotta say is that shot of that future vision, if you will, of Barry dying and disintegrating in the crisis. I mean, you know, a lot of people give the CW Arrowverse shows a lot of crap, but man, they're pulling panels directly from the comic book,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing it amazingly. And I don't understand the hate. You know, you can not like certain aspects of the show. Like, I've had issues with season 4 of The Flash and whatnot, but you cannot discount the fact that they are pulling off a shared universe in the way that, unfortunately, the movie universe couldn't or hasn't been able to this point.
I would even say, and this is quickly, that it rivals what Marvel's doing. Because yes, Marvel has amazing movies, but what we're seeing in the DC TV CW-verse is the closest thing we've ever seen to comic book
mm-hmm.
multiverse or shared universe and stuff like that. It's the closest thing to that. So, and I'm a huge Marvel fan. So it's like,
oh, for sure.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
But yeah, that visual was just amazing. And I literally was losing it while sitting in front of the TV watching it. It was just like, I can't believe they're actually doing this. They're going this deep. The cut is this deep. It's not a cut. It's a wound.
It's open. No. Now you say that, and to me, I'm gonna be honest. I'm struggling a little bit with the crisis death, not because it's not amazing, and not because it may or may not happen. Let's put a pinch on that. But it's the fact that, you know what? Now that I think about it, it's not much of a problem. But it kind of, us seeing Crisis now, it shows how big the dream has always been. Because if you remember, they kind of already teased this or did it once in the season finale of season 2.
Yeah.
And I remember that's in my young Flash fan days. I was watching the season finale where he actually brings in a whatever it means time remnant. I'm gonna put that word there with warning signs because nobody really knows what they are. He puts a time remnant of himself while he finishes off his race with Zoom. The time remnant is running around to destroy Zoom, which if no one can see that's literally an homage directly to the antimatter gun or whatever the anti-monitor has, and the way he disintegrates, I know I leapt. I was like, oh my god,
yeah,
thank you Christ, you know, like the dream was big. And the fact that they started this season with Barry already knowing that he's dying gives a brand new perspective and fresh look at such a classic story, because we've never seen it from this side.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And they're pulling all the stops to make this accessible to everybody. So I know it has nothing to do with this, but for example, everything that's going on with Arrow is very interesting too.
Oh, Arrow's been fantastic. Yeah.
And the way they've been using Arrow as the character that's prepping everything. Now, you were going back to what you were mentioning about Tom Cavanaugh. I think this is gonna be the one event where he plays the most characters, because he's definitely playing the Reverse Flash. He's definitely playing Nash Wells. He's probably going to play another Wells from another place, but he's also Pariah.
Yeah.
So he's going to have the time of his life.
Oh yeah. I mean,
so
he's definitely going to probably have, you're right, the most, I mean, short of what, maybe Oliver probably.
Yeah.
He's the second, you know, he's going to be up there in screen time for sure. But yeah, so far I'm loving the season. Like you said, in terms of what they're doing with the main storyline outside of Crisis, and then also the build-up and setup to Crisis. It's just all working right now, 3 episodes in.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, even though you said 3 was kind of okay, it was okay. It wasn't exceptional like the first two. But look, you can have a okay or slash filler episode as long as the content is enjoyable, then I'm good with it. Yeah.
Right. And it wasn't a bad episode. Like, for example, to me, it felt more like a filler. But for me, what I love about it, and I actually wanted to mention this, is that I love how it set up the groundwork for, because you know how in a story, you have the villain of the story, and then you have the good guys in the story. And then there's like a story idea that's like, that's shared within them, but it's very general. Like this particular episode set the groundwork for the personal side of the conflict that Bloodwork and Flash are going to have. Mm-hmm. Because I love the line that he said when they're talking about when he catches Mohinder, when he catches Mohinder stealing the dark matter, and they have the kind of confrontation. And he goes like, but I'm dying. I'm trying to save lives. And then when Barry says, but sometimes you have to accept it and enjoy the time you have. Yeah. And he sees and he says, that's the same look my mother had. So now it's personal for him because when he finds out that he's the Flash, it's just going to blow up. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I like how they've taken this character that, in my understanding, he only has a 4-issue stint right now so far.
Right, from the New 52, right? I suppose,
yeah. No, he's from the current DC Rebirth.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Which,
by the way, I personally love it because Joshua Williamson is getting all the love in the world in the show.
Yeah.
And because everything that he's doing in the DC Rebirth Flash is fantastic.
Agreed.
I love that his run has no end in sight, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Because he has done, I haven't been 100% on board with anything, but when I see even the things that I'm not crazy about, as I see them pay off, I'm like, yes, okay, let's keep going.
You know what it is with, I'm glad you brought him up because we're going to transition into the comic. But what I love about the overall run and his overall run is that there's a consistency to it in terms of quality. It's consistently good. There's nothing outright that turns me off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, that was terrible or that's ridiculous, right? You know,
right, right.
It's getting stale. It's just consistently good. Every artist that he's paired with brings their A game. And, you know, Joshua Williamson is now handling 3 of my top 5 DC characters. He's doing Batman, Superman, the title, mm-hmm. which with three issues in is equally as fantastic. And then Flash, he's been doing since that. It's been the start of Rebirth, right?
Right. He's been. Yeah, he's been since issue 1.
Right. So, like I said, can we just keep him on those 2 books forever and let's keep going?
Yeah.
Because I'm loving it. And so, with that transition, why don't we get into our main topic for tonight?
Let's do it. So, what are we talking? So, you want me to introduce it?
Yes, go ahead.
So, since this is, of course, a Flash-centric pod, we talk a little bit about our thoughts on the movie or what's going on with the movies. We talk a little bit about what's going on in season 6 of The Flash. That's 3 episodes in. But, of course, we are mostly concerned about talking comic books because comics is where we get all the good stuff, all of these crazy stories, these characters fleshed out that in a way that inspire us, fills us with hours of enjoyment, but also prep us and fuel the live adaptations that we see. If it weren't for the comic books, we wouldn't be excited for live adaptations. So, so we really want to talk about comics, and specifically, we want to talk about our main speedsters, those that know the main characters of the Flash family are, of course, Barry Allen, Jay Garrick, Wally West, and I would say Bart Allen to a degree, even though to a lesser extent. But we want to dedicate an episode to each of those speedsters and what's going on with them in comic books right now. And this particular episode, we're going to focus on Barry Allen. Barry Allen, as you guys know, is one of the main holders of the Flash mantle since 1964, I think it is, when he was premiered. He was dead for a little bit after he gave his life for the Multiverse in Crisis, brought back in 2009 in Flash Rebirth. and he has been the main version of the Flash ever since, with great writers as Geoff Johns, Mark Waid, so many amazing writers writing him, even Grant Morrison, and right now Joshua Williamson is writing him in DC Rebirth. So I thought we got together, figure out what should we talk about the Flash, and what better way to concentrate and talk about Barry Allen than talk about the epic 6-issue run. That I think it was fantastic how this run felt like a mini series that was inserted from the heavens into the main title. I actually loved that they trusted Williamson into including this as part of his run, as opposed to giving it a separate title.
Yeah.
Because it fits so well with where the issues are going right now. Especially now, looking backwards, that I love it. And we're talking about the mini arc, Flash Year One, where we are presented with a new version of the origin story, or an updated version, in the new DC Rebirth universe. Is that the best way to put it? Right.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah.
Like not to get too much continuity issues, but like they pretty much presented us what the DC Rebirth version of this origin story would be. And I think it's fantastic. It's 6 issues. It deals. Yes. We watch we see him struck by lightning again. We are introduced with Iris for the first time. We're introduced with August Hart for the first time. But the way it's written, it's fresh. The characters are handled with so much respect. Their relationships, the way the Flash's powers are explored, from him learning from scratch how to use them and learning how to grow with these powers. I don't know. I love this. I have so much to say about this particular run. But what I find the most interesting, though, is that finally, almost every character in existence that's been beloved has received some kind of separate, specialized mini arc on their origin. I think this is the first time that they go into so much detail with the Flash. So, which is why it was a big deal that they did Flash Year One. Because I know we have like secret files, like little offshoots that they did where they re-explored it. On DC Rebirth, you see flashbacks. Right. But I think this is the first time that we've seen a retelling of Barry's origin with such detail. And I don't know. I read it for the second time preparing for the pod, and I had a blast, man. I love this run.
You know, it's funny because you know what hooked me into it?
Yeah.
Right off the bat was I think it was the opening scenes with his mother in the attic, I think it was.
Yes.
When he's reading the comics and she comes in and he's got the bruise on his face and she talks about him getting into a fight and she says, you know, you should have came to me. And he's like, no, they weren't coming after me. They were going after other people, and I had to do, what was I going to do? Just stand around? And he's like, my heroes wouldn't do that. So instantly, it's kind of meta in that sense.
Yeah,
that he's inspired by heroes he's reading from the comics, just as we're inspired by the comic and the characters we're reading. So I like the meta aspect of it, but the importance is, you know, the young Barry's relationship with his mother. It sets it as a cornerstone right off the bat, and it makes it like, even in the brief bits of it that we got, which were a little bit more than the flashbacks in Rebirth, but still, it's still brief in the grand scheme of things. But it's so vital just from those opening moments, and it just pulls you in. Because, look, we all have mothers. We all know what that relationship is like. And I think it echoes the importance. It's not the exact same, you know, dynamic, but it's similar of the way the TV show put emphasis on it, the relationship with his mother. But also, I think that's one of the things that the DC Films universe has gotten right, the idea of mothers and their sons. And so it's nice to see that, while we haven't seen that in a Flash movie yet, it's nice to see that synergy kind of thing happening in the comic, which I really, but that hooked me in. Like I was in from that moment right then and there.
Oh no, and I agree with you 100%. And what draws me is also is how it sets a precedent for what we're going to get in this run or this in this arc. Because, for example, most times when we talk about Barry's origin, we know about her mother, his mother, but we emphasize on the murder. This run did not do that.
Mm-hmm.
It emphasized on his relationship with his mother and how his mother influences his morality, how his mother influences his view of the world. Like, the idea of being hopeful comes from his mother.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of embracing one's heroes or whatever that vision of heroism and comes from his mother, because they go out of the way to say that the comics belong to her.
Yeah.
Those were her comic books, which is fantastic, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, and I don't know, he does such a good job in setting that tone. Like we're gonna go into really what makes Barry Allen tick.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how through the issues it grounds and gives a lot of relative, like it makes it very relevant and something that you can relate to.
Yeah.
The idea of his fear ever since his mother's death. Mm-hmm. Because in reality, this story, like all great Flash stories, especially when they're personal, it has to do with him overcoming his own fear of the past.
Yeah.
Because he's the character that never wants to move on because he's afraid of moving on because of what happened in the past. And the same arc is seen throughout the different characters. And I don't know, man. And it's funny. I don't know if you noticed this. If I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong. Joshua Williamson went back hard because he didn't just go back to modernizing the origin. He reintroduced us to his mother and how his mother is a big figure. But not only that, he went back to the first Flash villain. Because if I'm not mistaken, the Turtle was like one of the first villains that Barry Allen fought. So he went way back. And I'm going to tell you right now, I wasn't a huge fan of the Turtle.
Neither was
but
I. Yeah.
But they knocked it out of the park with this one.
And that's the thing. Because for me, when you say, you know, like the Flash has a great rogues gallery, right? And that you can go down the list. Maybe there are people that probably won't agree with me. But I think the Flash's rogues, despite their weird names, and they might come off as ridiculously funny in some cases, the names, but mm-hmm. despite that, his rogues, I think, are right up there with Batman's and Spider-Man's.
He's one of those few, he's one of those few characters that has, right. And it's because each rogue is very unique in particular. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because you know how that you say they have funny names?
Yeah.
They have funny names. But how many weird names have we given to the Flash? You got Scarlet Speedster, Crimson Comet,
and
like, so it falls right in line with that campiness that comes with that character.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I agree.
But so then, when you presented with the first one, we're going to tackle with for this year one story, is the Turtle.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, really? When I read that name just off the top of my head, I'm like, okay, so you could have gone with, Captain Cold. You could have gone with Reverse Flash, et cetera, et cetera. And here we are. We're going with the Turtle. I'm like, I don't know about this, but let's see what you got. And what they got is it was fantastic because there's not only the physical juxtaposition of their abilities, whereas the Flash is moving at, super speeds. And he's slowing everything down, so there's the contrast there. But it's like, look at when they go back and they show you the origin of the Turtle, mm-hmm. and you see Flash. Yes, he had the tragedy with his mother, but he came from a loving, caring family.
Right.
The Turtle came from a messed up situation, and so you're already seeing the like I said, they're just setting up the contrast so wonderfully, and it makes him they really elevated. They said, forget about the ridiculous of the Turtle, and let's show you this character and make you again, his motives are ridiculous. And his motives not his motives, but what he does is abhorrent and all that stuff. But when you see the kind of upbringing he had and how, you know, as he, you know, he was injured, which is what led to his powers. But while he was injured, like, his peers passed over him. And so there was that resentment. You could almost see that his upbringing and that occurrence, like, pushed him to where he ended up. Almost kind of like the Joker movie, right? How, you know, the circumstances led to Arthur Fleck becoming the Joker. So when you do that, you could sell, like, if a writer is capable of doing that, he could sell you on any character with any name. It then becomes about the character, and you really get not emotionally invested, but you I guess you kind of do, but in the turtle and in this conflict between him and Bear, because there is so many contrasting aspects of it. So just for the because you'll be able to explain the time travel and the plot better, but for our listeners who maybe were confused, what is the turtle's end game here? In this, what's he trying to do?
Well, what he's trying to do is, because the thing with the turtle is, when he experienced that scientific or catastrophe, that pretty much slowed him down to a crawl, how he describes it. Everything is moving so slow for him in terms of his life that he has become immortal. So everybody is passing him by no matter what. So what he wants to do is slow everyone down to his level.
Right.
So the suffering of, he wants to inflict to society the suffering of his own immortality. Yeah. In other words, if I'm immortal and I'm slow, even if you die because I steal your speed, I want you to slow down and feel what I'm feeling. So he's the typical, I want revenge on society. I want revenge on other people. I want people to suffer because I've suffered. Not because there's no justified reason. Like you said, it's a very simple motive, but that's technically what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Now, when you mentioned the contrast, which is fantastic, I would like to take that just a step a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
Which talks about how fantastic, for our listeners there, it highlights what a fantastic writer Joshua Williamson has been, is that they tied the origin story to what he has introduced in Flash War of all the different forces.
Mm-hmm.
Because pretty much, it wasn't until I think it's issue around the Perfect Storm arc, where Gorilla Grodd lays siege, that we're not thoroughly introduced to the Steel Force. So, but it's telling us, no, the Steel Force has always been there. So they're letting us know that with the turtle, that's the first encounter that Barry had with the forces.
Mm-hmm.
Even though for us, it's the first one that he had.
He didn't know what it was back then. Yeah.
Exactly. He just didn't know what it was back then. So it's like he has tied everything to his current Flash run, and at the same time has tied this story so it makes sense when connecting it to other adventures in the past and other tellings of the story. So there's no denying that this origin is canon.
Yeah.
And what I found even more fantastic, even though we're moving forward, but it's something that I think I can just mention, how he ties in Wally and Wallace into the origin is just fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
There's a lot of little things there. That I truly enjoy, that we both truly enjoyed. Now, if we do a quick recap of the show, sorry,
the book,
I'm excited.
Book.
I'm excited.
Okay. Yeah.
If we do a good recap of the book, so we start with Barry Allen and August Hart, which we're meeting for the first time, mm-hmm. and I like the fact that we're able to see their relationship pre Godspeed.
Me too.
So I kind of I really enjoy like seeing August in his beat cop days and stuff like that. That was actually a pretty nice view of him, which is one of the biggest contributions that Joshua Williamson has done to the Flash mythos is definitely that character, the character of Godspeed and August Hart. So they're reviewing a crime scene. The way they reintroduce Iris was fantastic.
Agreed.
And I like how in the you can see in the panels how they give her a full splat page just for her, because it, and how they give it importance, because a lot of people underestimate how important the female counterparts for our heroes are. You know, they're very important to advising the story of these heroes. Like, there's no interesting Superman to a degree without Lois Lane.
Right.
There's no interesting, and I'm not talking about Tom King, so I'm just gonna put that out there.
No, I hear you. I know where you're going. Yeah.
there's degrees of complexity in Batman that you don't get without Selina Kyle.
Agreed.
Just like you explore different ones with Talia and stuff like that, like all the great loves. Sure. So Iris has always been known as the great love of Barry Allen. So I love how they reintroduce her, how they introduce the first days of the relationship, which they explore. But one of the things that I enjoy the most is how they explore him exploring his powers.
Me too. I was just gonna bring that up.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Like, I loved the scene where after the accident, when he gets his powers, and he's like, obviously he starts running really fast. So there's that testing phase where he's trying to see how far he can go. Mm-hmm. And he, like, before he goes, like, not only does he go so fast and so, you know, that he goes into the future, but even before that, the simpler thing of how he puts together his pre-Flash mm-hmm. costume. I love that it's so, you know, he's using his what he has available to him, but also using his wits that, you know, because he's a scientist and he knows what would make sense, what would work with the speed and what would be beneficial to him. I love that because, you know, it's very convenient when you have a show or a movie where the hero's got a tech guy that does it for him. But I'm a sucker for a hero that can do it himself and that comes up with it himself. So I loved that aspect of it.
Yeah. Which is interesting because that's one of the main reasons why people that love Batman love Batman. And to me, what I say to that is that this is one of the main reasons why in the comic books, even though after the price, they're kind of off, why one of the best pairings is the Flash and Batman.
Yeah.
Because they kind of understand each other. They're like two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
People that, quote unquote, learn everything from scratch, and the persona just adds to what they can do. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I completely agree with you. What I loved about this is how they doubled down on everything that Barry was pre-Lightning Bolt, which is a lot of things that we miss, which for me, it's what I hate about the show.
Yeah.
It's like, to a degree, after he was struck by lightning, he's the Flash. But because you have the ensemble, we kind of forget that he's a scientist. We kind of forget that he's smart. We kind of forget that he knows his way around a lab. Yeah. Because we have other characters that we have to give a story to, which I understand. But it kind of defeats the purpose, which is why, for me, for example, one of my biggest dreams is that I do not want the Flash movie to be an ensemble piece. I want it to be a solo movie where it's Barry Allen figuring everything on his own with very little assistance. Like, I want him, you know what I mean? Because you get things like this. Like, whenever I saw him saying or writing, do this, use the science. Whenever I read that, it blew my mind.
Yeah.
Because it's how he's, it's a very clever way. And I applaud Joshua, but I also applaud the one that did all the panels, the artist, because it's like,
Howard Porter, I think it was the artist on this.
I think so, yeah. And his art is fantastic. This is one of those writers, it's a perfect pairing of a writer that was born to write the Flash and an artist that was born to draw the Flash.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm personally a big sucker for Gian D'Amico. The one that did the first Lightning Strikes Godspeed run, because the way he uses colors is just fantastic. But this particular artist was perfect because I think it was a perfect balance with colors and lightning and panels and stuff like that. But the way that you read those little notes outside of the bubbles that kind of like pull you into his mind, like you feel as a reader that you're discovering everything with him.
Right.
Which makes the ride so good.
It literally felt like, you're right, but that discovery along with the character kind of makes you forget that you've been reading a seasoned version of this hero mm-hmm. for so long. And you get down to the, I'm in the same boat as this guy, whereas I'm figuring it out along with him, right?
Yeah.
I'm part, you almost as a reader, at least in my case, feel more part of the story than when, it's like a RPG or a 3D right. video game where you're right in there, right? Whereas when you're reading an current timeline story and continuity, it's kind of like I'm back in the position of just a fan/reader reading
correct.
This how experienced Barry is or how experienced Batman is or whoever the case may be, whoever the hero is. So I really appreciated that almost point of view along for the ride experience that we had with Barry in this story.
Was I the only one that found it hilarious and super interesting that whenever he, in the beginning, whenever he phased, he blew stuff up?
Yeah.
That was so funny. And in fact, and it's funny because it kind of highlighted how he himself was scared of his powers in the beginning.
It's the inexperience, which is great.
Like right.
If he knew how to do everything full stop right off the bat, then there's no fun in that. It's not like then you're forgetting where you are in continuity as a writer if you're doing that. Right?
Right.
So if you're going to have an origin tale, you have to have those unsure moments. Like even when there's the part where he follows Iris and there's a shooting and mm-hmm. he stops the shooting and all the bullets, but he gets shot himself. So he has to go back home to his apartment and like phase, like he has to do the phasing of the hand trick, right? I got flashbacks to when Wells used to do that to Cisco, to pull the bullet out of himself. And like, you see, this is where the art comes in.
That was excruciating, bro.
Yeah.
That was excruciating.
This is where the art comes in because A, it's disgusting with the amount of blood. I was shocked by the amount of blood. I mean, it's not a Saw movie level, but it's, for a comic book, for a PG-13 comic book, it was pretty good. But also, you could see the detail of the sweat and the nerves within Barry. And I loved it. The detail was just incredible.
And it made it that much real. If this was happening, this is that dire. Like he it's either die or survive. And go ahead.
All the while have to lie to Iris to keep her out of that. Yeah. So
Iris is pouring her heart out, like in the other side of the door.
And he's like, yeah.
Oh man, this one it's beautiful. I mean, okay, so
we should talk about. I mentioned the future, so we should get there.
Oh, definitely. Well, here's the thing. Did you see this coming? I could not see this coming.
No.
I was not expecting time travel.
Me neither.
And you know what's funny? Like every time I talk about time travel and the Flash,
you get a headache.
Well, no, I'm good with it because I actually have grown as a Flash fan. I've come to accept that it's part of the
deal,
mythos.
Yeah.
It's not exactly. So you have to know that that's one of those things. I'm still trying to get my head around the Forever Force, but that's a different story. So the fact that they did time travel in issue 2, nonetheless, of 6 issues, like they introduced time travel so quickly. To me, I always think about I've recorded before and I've said before that I always think that multiverse or time travel is always sequel territory when it comes to like a Flash movie or a story. But this blew my mind because it is such a smart way to include such a complicated facet of the Flash myth from the beginning because it made every sense of the world. And it's like, it made sense because of the turtle. It made sense because of the idea of time paradoxes. Because, and it made sense with the story they were trying to tell of a character that needs to learn to move forward. A character that needs to believe that there can be a better tomorrow. And when of course for me the biggest takeaway. So let me go back and introduce this. So Barry's trying out all his powers at the end, towards the end of issue one, which is issue 70 of the current Flash run. And he does the how fast can I go test. So he runs at the fastest speed. He literally cuts loose for the first time. You have this nice panel of a big boom because he breaks the sound barrier. And then when he finds himself going so fast, he stumbles as he tries to stop. And when he wakes up and stands up, he finds himself in the future, mm-hmm. in a central city that is overrun by the army of the Turtle. Someone he never knows before, but more than anything, he encounters his future self. And even though, yes, the future Barry was kind of like running away and whatever, I'm gonna tell you this: every time I see future Barry, I just find him to be so badass.
Oh yeah,
especially like no mask, just like special sweatshirt and boots. Like I find that look so hardcore.
He kind of almost went back to the beginning of what the outfit that that was presented here, kind
right.
of.
Right. Well, that's the interesting take on it but that's the interesting thing. It's not that he went back to that. It's because one of the big things that you kind of are led to believe is that the future Flash has that particular suit because he never moved forward. And the reason that our current Flash has the Flash ring and the full new suit is because this is the Flash that went forward. This is the Flash that beat the paradox or that beat the past. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have a Flash that's still a hero, but couldn't live, but pretty much settled with his failure. That's why he didn't evolve and move forward with the Flash ring. Like he did a lot of different things, but he didn't do that. I mean, that's what I understand we're led to believe.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But he goes to the future. It's crazy. And he's scared. He has his interaction with Barry, and I find it very interesting how future Barry tells current Barry that their life is a loop that can't be broken. And literally the only way the main Barry is able to become a hero is that he literally causes the time paradox. He literally causes a new timeline, which is kind of like the thing that you're not supposed to do.
Right.
But it makes you think that there is a thing that when a hero changes the timeline for the better, there it is something that's acceptable, at least when it comes to the Flash.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I found it fantastic. I wasn't expecting them to do time travel.
No, I was totally surprised, but I loved like the advice portions where he's like, I guess we haven't learned the time travel is a no-go or whatever exactly he says. Yeah. Or the moment when they're back in the bunker, right? They're regrouping from from their experience with, I think it was King Turtle at that point.
Right.
But, or whatever he was called. I think that's what he was called. But where, or was it his lab? It was the future version of his lab, his old lab. Yeah.
Oh, you mean when they're looking for the cosmic treadmill?
Yeah, and they find...
Which, by the way, that was a huge, like, shout-out to classic Wally West. That was fantastic.
For sure.
That was amazing.
But I think you see, you find... Either you find the comics or they reference the mother's comics.
Mm-hmm.
I think he found them, right?
That is in issue, I think it's 4 or 5, when the turtle makes its way to the present.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're regrouping in Barry's lab. Yeah,
that's okay. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but when they're talking and future Barry is like, "Oh, mom's old comics. I used to love these things." He goes, "I used to hate how long it took to bag and board them, though." And as a comic reader, I'm like, "Oh yeah, I can relate to that." But to bring it back full circle to that, the moment at the beginning with the comics was such a wonderful thing, and it just, again. It's those little moments that made the story that extra special for me.
No, and especially because it goes back to Barry's. Because here's the other thing, though. Like, yes, this is a standalone arc, but if we put it in the context, this is Steadfast, the new Steel Force user that was introduced in issue 69, showing Barry this memory.
Yeah.
And the big lesson that Steadfast wants Barry to get is that lesson from himself, which is when he told his mom, is like, they were bullying other kids. The heroes that I know wouldn't let this happen. And when we look at future Barry, that's what future Barry is allowing the turtle to do. Yeah. He's allowing the turtle to bully Central City. Mm-hmm. He's allowing them to do that. He's standing on the sidelines. He's being selfish and saving himself, yeah. Which is why that moment where he practically either slaps or pushes future Barry to the side, he says, that's not what heroes do. Yeah. Like, I refuse to run away. I rather dive into fear and hope that I can free Central City and die trying than to be that, which is allows him to become the flesh that we know.
Yeah, about. Exactly. But and even now that we're there, the way he beats Turtle, I thought was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So why don't you give us a little bit more context into that? Because I thought it was just floored me.
Which is very interesting because one of the things that we have seen, this is mostly something that we learn in the Wally West run, which is the idea of Speed Force users sharing the Speed Force and giving Speed Force to other Speed Force users to increase your speed. One of the big moments that I remember this from is when Wally West fights Zoom for the first time, mm-hmm. that he practically gets the speed from everyone else to be able to battle Zoom. Because Zoom is in a league of its own at that point. From one side of the spectrum, the turtle is stealing speed from everybody else. But as the entire Central City citizens join together to fight against the turtle, the Flash sees that he can't give up. So he concentrates in the speed that he has, starts to run towards the turtle to do a final blow, but because he is in the same spirit as everyone else, he starts to feel the Speed Force, mm-hmm. which is something that Barry Allen is not always associated with. Barry Allen is always known as the scientific Speed Force speedster. Yeah. Wally West is always a spiritual speedster. Like, he has more knowledge of the Speed Force as a force, as a power that he can draw from, which is why, and I'm not afraid to say this, which is why Wally West is always considered the fastest, because he has a more intrinsic, I would say, natural connection to the Speed Force. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we kind of see Barry tapping into that as he begins to feel Central City literally giving him speed, mm-hmm. which allows him to be supercharged to defeat the turtle once and for all, which is just fantastic.
It's the reverse of what the turtle is stealing speed, right? So
mm-hmm. it's instead of stealing, is sharing. It's
exactly. Yeah, and I love the way Joshua Williams, you know, he does that.
Yeah,
just it's beautiful symmetry.
It's all over.
And then even those pages near the end, the splash page with all the speedsters, I thought,
yeah,
what a great you know.
Yeah, it's a great homage.
Yeah.
It feels, this Flash Year One feels not just as a retelling, but it feels like Joshua Williamson is tipping his hat to all the writers that came before him, saying like, hey, and that's what I love most about it. He did not trample anything.
Yeah.
He took everything that was already there. He recognized it. He honored it. And then he started building on it and made it his own. But even though he made it its own, it still feels like the best compromise in terms of the best combination of elements. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no.
He pretty much put the entire Flash mythos in a nutshell. And I don't know, man. Like, every comic book that I own lately, I've had it digitally. Like, I have the entire DC Rebirth digitally because where I live, I don't have space to buy it. But this is one of those volumes that I am buying in hardcover
or paperback.
Like I really enjoy this. Go ahead. You were going to say something.
No, but it's, I'm glad that you pointed that out in the sense that it's not an origin story that throws out the years of history. It embraces it and if anything expands upon it. Doesn't throw it away.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, and that's refreshing for a new take on the origin, because usually when they say we're doing a new take on the origin, it means okay, out with the old and in with the new, and whether you like it or don't like it,
right,
too bad, deal with it, right? And this was the exact opposite of that, and that's part of the reason I loved it. Is there anything specific you want to key in on, or we can rate this and then start wrapping up here? Is there anything else?
This is the line that I loved most about the whole thing, because it kind of talks about, it's very unique. It's one of those flashbacks kind of, it's not a flashback, but it's one of those, well, it is a flashback. You know what? I'm going to say it. It's a flashback. Adam.
All right, go ahead. That's the first one of the podcast. We're going to do a count of how many times we say that.
when present Barry asks future Barry, how do you slow down? And future Barry goes, you slide into it. Like, that wording, that image of him just sliding into a stop, which is like the biggest homage to every comic book of the Flash.
Yeah.
Because everything that you see, like, I think this is the first time to a degree that this is directly alluded to. Because every time you see the Flash stop, what is he doing? He's sliding.
Sliding, yeah.
And like he pretty much made the slide canon. I know it's like a very small detail.
And you've seen it on so many covers too. Like, it's...
Yes. Even on the show.
Yeah.
You see him like sliding and arriving, yeah. which to me,
so true.
It shows how much care he put into all those little details, because all of them mattered. And since we're wrapping up, do you want me to wrap up with what happened at the end, or is something else you want to share?
Yeah, no, given it, no, I'm good.
I can talk about this all day.
Yeah, I know. I covered everything that I wanted to get across. And so yeah, give us your the ending, and then we'll give our grade.
Like how it was timed. Like, you could see the timestamps throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I love how it ends with Flash Day.
Yeah.
That's like the biggest, like, that's how you know that this is what's all about, celebrating the Flash, because and that highlights also to me one of the things that I love most about the Flash hero and its legacy that you don't see with other heroes as much,
mm-hmm.
is that the Flash is one of the heroes that is the most celebrated by their hometown.
Yeah.
Central City loves the Flash. Keystone loves the Flash. And he has a very direct relationship with its citizens, with the people that he saves, that the fact that you would see the parade of the Flash Day, and on the parade, you see all the newspaper clippings of all the different enemies that he's defeated.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. And when it goes, and of course, this series started with in issue 69, where Steadfast puts Barry Allen in a coma or a trance, so he can remember the events of Flash Year One. It mm-hmm. ends with Barry waking up, which I love the fact that they changed the art style when he comes back.
Yeah, that was cool.
And he goes straight to rebuild the Flash Museum. And it feels like we're starting off again with the character,
yeah.
Which I'm ready for. And what's happened since Flash Year One has been fantastic.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Now I am gonna say, this is the last thing I want to say, and I think you saw my Twitter that I already kind of shared my hot take on this.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So and I want to know how you feel about it, but I know they want to do multiverse. I know they want to do something crazy, but I'm gonna be honest, man. If there was ever, if Joshua Williamson has a script for a Flash movie that is based on this, I am not surprised. Because what a better story to adapt for a Flash movie. It is so perfect. Like, this could be your Flash movie, and I would just watch it like a million times in theaters.
Look, here's what I'll say. I know for the longest time they were saying Flashpoint this, Flashpoint that, Flashpoint the other thing. I don't think it's going to be Flashpoint at this point, especially if Muschietti and Christina Hodson are the ones that do it. I don't think we're going to see Flashpoint at this point.
Yeah.
But I think if you definitely have that desire, if you're Warner Brothers and say, we love the idea of the time travel aspect. We want to see some time travel in there. This is the way to go, because Joshua Williamson wrote it in a way that it's easily digestible, so that for one of the rare times that I'm reading a time travel story in general, I don't have a headache after reading it. So right. What I would suggest is, look, when Christina Hodson is prepping for her writing, or if she has, or whatever, I'm hoping they gave her an advanced copy. If she started writing before this story was finished, I hope they gave her an advanced copy of this story, because I think, like I said, I think you're right in that this is a story that would put a smile on the most hardcore Flash fan's face to see it on the big screen. But also, I think it would allow the general audience who isn't that familiar with the Flash to be able to grasp it. I mean, it has that four quadrant appeal that something like Aquaman and Shazam had. Yep. And it has it still has the epic scope in terms of story. You don't need Flashpoint. You don't need heroes dying in this and that, left, right, and center. I think you're right. I think you said this once, that the Flash has gone through, dark times in his storied history. But at the core, one of the core essential elements of the character that you touched on at the top was his hopefulness. And
right.
I think this story, this five or six parts, I think it was five, right? Or six?
Six issues.
Six. This six-part story encapsulates all of that. And I think it would behoove the filmmakers to look at this. And I think, given given how we're seeing, Aquaman tackled it was more New 52, but it was probably one of the best Aquaman stories that they kind of adapted from.
Yeah.
Shazam was very, very much more of a modern take.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Warner Brothers, I got, especially because they're in that stage now where I think they're probably in the formative stages. Give Joshua Williamson's work here a look. I mean, I know the tendency is to go with something by Johns, and if they do, that's fine, and I'll support it. But I don't know that, like I said, this to me would be a lot more four quadrant of a movie than something like Flashpoint would be. So I'm in full agreement with you there. Yeah. But in terms of reading this story, how do you want to do it on a scale of, you want to do it on a 10 out of 10 scale, or you want to do a letter grade? How do you want to?
You know what? We can do a letter grade.
Right.
And it has an A plus for me.
Oh yeah, I mean, like I said, as an origin, it checks all the boxes,
mm-hmm.
while at the same time fitting in with the current storyline that's been building up for 68 issues previous.
Yeah.
So on all those levels, I gotta agree with you. It's an A plus for me. One of the best Flash stories. I can put it up there. It's one of the best Flash stories I've read. Maybe one episode down the line, we'll rank our top five favorites.
Nice.
Once we go along. But for now, it's definitely a modern day classic for sure. Hands down. So A plus for me, A plus from you.
Yep.
That's going to wrap this first episode up. I had a lot of fun doing this. I hope you did too, Brandon.
Yeah, man. I had a blast, bro.
And I hope...
I was talking Flash. Yeah. Someone that loves the Flash just as much as I do. I love having this conversation. It's awesome.
And I, ho- And I hope that the listeners enjoyed it. We hope that you will join us next time. But until then, where can people talk Flash with you if they so choose, Brandon? If they want to talk with you about the Flash, where can they do that?
They can look me up on Twitter, at thescarletfan52. That is at thescarletfan52 on Twitter.
And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at Adam_LeafsFan. I had to change my Twitter. I had some mishap with it. So there it is. Or you can go to the Tales from DC Multiverse page on Facebook. Request membership there. I will add you there and we can talk there as well. But shall we do some sort of Flash sign off? How should we send this thing off?
Huh.
Give us
I don't know.
Let's come up with a good Flash. Flash appropriate sign off.
Well, we look forward to talking the Scarlet Feaster with you guys later in the future. We'll see you. We'll be back in a flash.
So long, everybody.